Hello and welcome to the EDH Retcast, where we're all about Commander, data, and dad jokes. I'm Joey Schultz and I'm joined by my fantastic co-hosts. Up first, I cannot wait for him to cosplay as the Fallout Pip-Boy bobblehead cards. It's Matt Morgan.
So Joey, have you heard about this new sport that's breaking out? It's wildly popular. It's called quiet tennis. It's basically regular tennis, but without all the racket.
Protection racket, even a card Protection from Nuka Penna.
I mean, as long as we can get people to stop playing pickleball, that's all I care about.
Oh wow, Matt!
I just frustrated like 90% of our audience.
I wonder if that's true. How many pickleball enthusiasts do you think we have out there in the EDH Retcast audience, though?
That actually is a very good question. But either way, I also don't need a costume to be the Fallout character. That's just me.
The resemblance is striking, I do gotta say. All right, up next, he doesn't just play the new Fallout cards, he also plays Summer Out and Winter Out and Spring Out cards. It's Dana Roach.
With Easter coming up here, I just want to say, like, as a parent, it's one of my favorite holidays. We spend like every other day of the year telling kids not to eat things they find in the ground, and it's the one day of the year we can be like, yeah, the candy in the backyard left by a strange rabbit, go ahead and eat that. That's fine. It's like a nice little vacation from having to do our job.
I did not think about that. Yeah. Suddenly, I have concerns, Dana. Anyway, though, Matt, what are we talking about in this week's episode, buddy?
Well, this week, we're going to talk about cards that we maybe held onto in our own decks for a little too long. Maybe this was just better versions of that, or maybe the deck steered away from what the card was doing originally. But either way, cards that we kind of held onto for way too long.
Yeah. Cards we probably should have cut sooner than we did. And more importantly, the lessons that we learned from trying to make those cards work and stuff like that. So I'm excited to get into this. But before we get there, we've got some shout outs we got to do. Up first, we want to thank Chase, aka Manicurves, for their terrific work on the post-production of the show. Chase, you're such a joy to work with. Thank you so much, Manicurves.
And we are now members of Team Ultimate Guard. So if you are out at any of the events we're going to be at this year and see us playing some games, you'll see some pretty fantastic katana sleeves on our decks, and you'll see those decks stored in the Ultimate Guard Boulder deck boxes that do a great job keeping our stuff safe.
Can I also shout out, like, the inner sleeves that they have are like my favorite inner sleeves as well, because like I've tried out inner sleeves that just like slide right off as soon as you try to put them in a sleeve, but like these
right.
These katana inner sleeves are just like, they are solid, they are there. I freaking love those too.
Would you say that they are a perfect fit for your cards?
I see what you did there.
There it is.
The perfect flit sleeves. I see what you did there. Yes, I would say that, Matt. I would.
I mean, that comment, kind of like my tennis joke, was all aces. But anyways, if you would like to support the show, you can do so by liking this video, subscribing on YouTube, subscribing to your local podcast app, even leaving a review. That's all stuff that you can do. It's free, and we appreciate all of that. All that support, it definitely helps in so many more ways than you can imagine. And if you are so behooved, you can head over to patreon.com/EDHRetcast, where we have all sorts of different patron levels, whether you want to join our Discord community, you want to see our historic challenge stats picks, there's all of that and more over at patreon.com/EDHRetcast, including the weekly coveted patron shout out. And this week we are going to give a huge shout out to Ed Steer. So Ed, I'm glad you steered your browser in the right direction.
Dang.
And went to Patreon and decided to support us. We appreciate it. It means the world.
You ever see a name and you're just like, I wonder what Matt's going to do with this? But then sometimes I saw this one and I was just like, I know exactly where Matt's going. And Ed, I'm sure you did too.
It was real easy.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the support, you guys. And now, fellas, we are going to jump into this topic. These cards that we maybe shouldn't have played them for as long as we did. And what did we learn from those experiences of trying to make these cards work? Why didn't we cut them sooner? I think this will be a really interesting conversation. I don't know. Dana, do you have a specific place that you'd like to start when it comes to cards? It's just like, okay, wait, why was I playing this for so long?
Sure. An easy one to start with here would be Brainstorm.
Matt's favorite.
Because everyone knows Brainstorm. Like, you know, a one mana, draw three, put two back on top at instant speed. That's a really good card to the point where it's kind of the defining card in an Eternal format. It's something that sees a ton of play. And when I first started playing Commander, if I was playing blue, it was like what I would call an auto-include. If I built a deck, it got a Brainstorm. However, as I played more Commander and started thinking about why I was including cards in decks, I kind of came to the realization that Brainstorm, while an absolute bomb in other formats, doesn't really do what I want cards to do in a Commander deck. And it got me thinking about a lot of other cards, but like Brainstorm being a perfect example of a card that does things that don't exist. It does things that other formats don't exist in Commander. One of the powers of Brainstorm in older formats is you could use it for like 15 different things. If people, you know, go to attack your hand with a Inquisition of Kozilek type of card, you could hide spells on the top. You have a ton of fetch lands, so you're constantly shuffling things away. So like the cards you put on top from the Brainstorm go away. There's just a lot of utility in that card, flipping a Delver, whatever, that doesn't really exist in Commander. So while it's probably a useful card if your deck cares about, you know, top deck manipulation or casting efficient instant or sorceries or something, it's not universally good in Commander like it is in the formats where it's legal. And it took me way too long to realize that.
Yeah, if you want to dig back through the archives of this show, one of the first, I don't even think it's controversial, but I remember saying that Brainstorm in Commander does not have near the impact that people think it does because of what it does in 60 card formats, especially because of the singleton nature. And that was kind of the first time we really got people's well, actually, it's still Brainstorm in Commander, as Dana just so put it, does not carry the weight that people think it does. It's Brainstorm apologists. I don't know why they pick Brainstorm of all cards when there's just so many better cantrips for Commander as well.
There are a lot of other ones out there that I do think in general serve better purposes. I agree with you here. Like Brainstorm showing up in 24% of decks that are eligible to play it, that does strike me as high. Over 430,000 decks. And like, we are going to be clear here. Like, I've got this in my Yennet deck because Yennet cares about the top of the deck, like Dana was mentioning.
Sure, sure.
There are commanders like Min Wily Illusionist. We're drawing two cards. That matters. Or Aruth, Tormented Prophet. Like, yes, these are commanders that clearly do harness the power of this card. But it's not every blue deck that harnesses the power of this card. And 24% is a huge amount of inclusion. And that's why, Matt, you've been railing against this one for so long.
For years. Like, for years.
There are a lot of other cantrips that you could be playing, even at instant speed, that would actually let you do a whole lot of other stuff too, and wouldn't like get you locked with like you accidentally Brainstorm lock yourself. So like I totally understand where you're coming from. And Dana, I think this is a great pick to start off.
Yeah, Brainstorm is like every other card out there. You have to ask yourself, why are you putting it into that deck? Because it's gonna fit in certain themes for sure. But if you need a cantrip for Commander, start with Ponder. Start with Preordain. Like those are cards that are gonna make sure that you're not locking yourself out, which is so much easier to do than people think.
Well, and we've just been talking the last couple of minutes about like the problems with Brainstorm in a general sense. For a specific sense for me, it made even less sense because I'm not somebody who like plays combos or is looking for a particular line in a deck. Brainstorm's, you know, strength, if you are someone who's maybe playing a deck that wants it in addition to manipulating the top deck or whatever, is maybe you are a combo player and whatever you do, you want to be able to find some particular piece lets a line go off. I'm not doing that either. So like, it doesn't even have the utility for me of like digging down, trying to find a specific piece. I don't want to find a card. I just want cards. Like, I'm better off just drawing a couple cards with Night's Whisper than I am with playing a Brainstorm and looking at them and selecting one in particular.
Yeah.
So it not only does it not work for me in like a kind of macro sense in terms of what the game does, it doesn't work for me in a micro sense in terms of what I'm doing when I play. And it just took a long time for me to like realize all of those things.
Hey, Matt, did you have on your bingo card Dana mentions Night's Whisper? I just wanted to check in.
I haven't
yet.
I
would hope you did.
I actually haven't made a bingo card in a little bit, so I'm kind of overdue to bingo-fy ourselves here. So
the free space is there are dad jokes. That is absolutely the free space.
Well, yeah, of course. Of course.
All right. I'll move on to one of mine that I think I was a little bit too afraid to let go and to be like, all right, I do need to move on from this. My example here that I'd like to submit is Burnished Heart, which I was using a lot of, especially like I enjoy playing black. I love getting extra swamps from my Cabal Coffer. So I was playing Burnished Heart, a 3-mana artifact creature 2/2 that you can pay 3 and sacrifice it to go and find 2 basic lands and put them onto the battlefield tapped. I was really just like, yeah, this will help my Cabal Coffer's type of effects be even better. I think that this is great for ramp when I don't have access to green and stuff like that. And for the record, I still appreciate this type of card in like especially colorless decks if they are needing extra help with that. There are places where this card can certainly go, but I don't think I was all the decks that I was playing this in were not necessarily those. I think I was just very, very reticent to let go of this one because I thought that ramp would be so important to get in this fashion. But like, I just needed to be honest with myself. A 6 mana explosive vegetation at the end of the day, like 6 total mana to get the explosive vegetation effect, I was better served by using other types of like Wayfarer's Baubles and other like cheaper 2 mana rocks and stuff like that, just to actually get my game plan off the ground faster. So I've really hardcore moved away from this one over time, and I wish that I'd done that a little bit sooner than I did, because it just is clunkier than I was willing to admit, I think.
Yeah, I also had kind of a similar experience, and it wasn't quite that mana inefficient, but I mean, you mentioned explosive vegetation. That's a card that I held on to, I think personally, for way too long too. At 4 mana, there's other cards that I found myself just wanting to play. I mean, Skyshroud Claim for a while got fairly expensive, but it's significantly better when it comes to just finding those lands that you need. At least, you know, explosive vegetation, for those of you who don't know, it's 3 and a green for a sorcery. Search your library for up to 2 basic land cards, put them on the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle. Well, you could just play Skyshroud Claim, and now that grabs Forest specifically, but if you're playing any sort of fetchable dual land, I mean, which you have them at common now, it's very easy to find fetchable duels these days. Mm-hmm. Skyshroud Claim is the same mana value, or even Ranger's Path, the same thing. It's just a better version of explosive vegetation in my mind. And so when I was holding on to explosive vegetation for so long, I just was like, man, I could be doing better with kind of the exact same mana value, or just getting cheaper ramp at that point too.
Well, not only were you holding on to explosive vegetation for a long time, Matt, I think the community was, because
it's a lot
only
of players
recently
were.
That the card Migration Path has surpassed explosive vegetation in terms of popularity, which is, it's finally at 69,000, whereas explosive vegetation is at 63. But like, that was a slow take for a card that is explosive vegetation, but also it has cycling.
Yeah.
Like, yep. Strictly better in every possible sense of the word. But it took a long time. That's just the way that the momentum of this format works, is that like, it takes a while for us to find these things that are actually better and for us to officially make those swaps. So you're totally not alone in this.
Well, in Ranger's Path too, I mentioned that as a card that I like more. That's only in 13,000 decks. And for a card that can fix your colors, and if you're playing a 4 or 5 color deck and green is part of that, Ranger's Path is a fantastic budget way to fix your colors. You, like I said, you have so many fetchable dual lands these days. Ranger's Path should just be in so many more, especially in the high color variants.
I think that is an example of a card where like you get so used to the mindset that, well, this is really good in my deck and I'm never going to want to cut this. Mm-hmm. That even when there's better alternatives, you kind of find yourself forgetting that to a degree. Like,
yeah,
you've just established mentally, this is always gonna be in my deck because I'm playing green and it's one of the better, you know, land ramp options out there. And even as new ones come along and you may add a few of them to your deck, you forget that could be one you could take out now because you've put better ones in there. It's easy to categorize that thing as always gonna be in my deck and then never reevaluate that, I think.
Can I, this is a weird experience, and Dana, I know that you play a whole lot of black, so you might have had this happen to you as well, but like, I'm used to like the ancient craving style cards of like draw 3 and lose 3, mm-hmm. And then when I would build a black and blue or a black and green deck, I would still like have that in the board, but I wouldn't include like a concentrate or a harmonize, which are the blue and green equivalents of just, right. No, just draw 3, you don't lose any life. Because in my head, I had just like immediately associated, oh, you know, in a black deck, this could be a good way to get card draw, and I was just so used to categorizing that as like black card draw that I didn't. Once I expanded it to a new color, I was like, I had to like, oh yeah, wait, these other like these other things exist when I don't usually associate concentrate with being a good card in blue. So it doesn't occur to me that like in that type of deck, it would be better than Ancient Craving. So just to kind of highlight your point there of just like, yes, we do like sort of mentally associate cards into certain boxes and we have to reevaluate those things when contexts change.
Well, I mean, it's kind of why Quick Study, which was a common from Wilds All Drain, but it's 3 mana, 1-2 blue for an instant that says draw 2 cards. It's only in 13,000 decks, whereas Divination is in, you know, over 11,000 decks. Oof. And that's just a sorcery speed version of that. And so, yeah, absolutely. The community works at a slower pace when it comes to adopting these just faster versions, these updated versions of these otherwise, you know, staples from years gone by.
Oh man, divination. That's a that is a good example, but also like not a good, because like there are going to be some cards that like I've never put divination into a deck, so it doesn't fit the category of, oh, I should have cut this sooner because I never played it. But like that is an interesting thing to take a look at, is that there are going to be a lot of cards that we probably don't address just because we like clocked them immediately. But there are plenty of cards that like I think folks out there will be just like, oh yeah, yeah, I've got examples here too, that, even though they might not be on our specific lists. But I just think that's so funny because divination is a great example of like, I would cut that sooner than later. I just wasn't playing it in the first place. And I do like Quick Study a whole lot, especially as a replacement for that.
Another one that I probably kept in my list for a long time, for reasons that we haven't talked about, is Damnation. Black's Wrath of God. You know, 4 mana, double black, double colorless, destroy all creatures that can't be regenerated. There's a lot of reasons for that too. Number one, it was really kind of the first, like a very efficient black board wipe. And it was an expensive, difficult to find card for a long time.
Yeah.
So there was this kind of mythos about Damnation that existed out there and kind of the ether that it was the premier black board wipe that you wanted to run. And maybe it was for a window. But then the price went down. It became a much more common card. That mythology kind of went away. They also printed a bunch more black board wipes. But still in my head, that was the one card I wanted to be running for a board wipe in black, even though the Toxic Deluges of the world existed. Other ways to do what it was going to do, maybe better depending on deck. But that was still the one I always like, well, I'm playing black, I'm going to run one Damnation as my wrath. And that took a long time for me to change that, or at least consider other options over Wrath of God. I wanted to run that just because of the reputation it had versus what it actually did in the game.
Well, and this kind of butts up to something that we talked about a lot from this. Another thing that we talked about from the start of the podcast is 5 mana wraths, just with the upside. Very rarely, I think I've seen in the past probably 2 years, regenerate be relevant once,
right,
where a different board wipe would have just done more things for the player that was casting them. And so, yeah, and 4 mana wipes in general, I think, kind of got glorified years and years ago, and we're finally starting to see like, oh, there's all these one-sided board wipes that I can cast them, and then I just win the game afterwards,
right,
because it's a way to get rid of all the blockers. Right. It's a way to get all these death triggers, whatever it is. And so we were ahead of the time. We were pretty hipster. We're kind of like Dana. People just weren't listening to us. But expensive board wipes, you don't need to lean into, oh, it has to be Wrath of God, Damnation, those 4 mana wraths. You can just play a more expensive version and get yourself a way to make it a 3-player wipe, not 4.
I know that Matt's going to have some strong feelings about the traditional Wrath of God style spells, which are still very, very popular. Wrath of God showing up on 126,000 decks, 8% of decks that are eligible to play it are doing so. But I, in almost every case, I've just like, I'd rather play like a Fumigate and gain a bunch of life for everything that got destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Because Regenerate just has not been particularly relevant. And if the argument is going to be about the mana efficiency of these compared to, I'm just like, well, the one more mana isn't that much of a difference to me. But also, like Matt, as you were saying, there are a lot of wipes out there that are like one-sided nowadays. Like the last time that I cast a Winds of Abandon overloaded, I KO'd a player because they didn't have creatures anymore, but I did.
And like, and when you cast it against Dana, he didn't have any basics to grab out anyway. So
right, exactly. Yeah. But they've also been supplanted now by, there's, what is it? Vanquish the Horde is another one, which is sort of the Blasphemous Act version of for white, which is also just like, well, that's only going to be 2 mana. So even then, I still think that like these 4 mana wraths have been outclassed for a really long time because of how many one-sided ones there are, because of how many flexible options that they have now. There are a lot of really cool. So yeah, I was just like, I know that Matt's going to feel a very big, strong type of way about the wraths, especially in white. Dana, it's interesting to hear that you felt this, especially about Damnation, because I again think that like the efficiency becomes part of the argument there. But like you listed Toxic Deluge as a really great option. Granted, another kind of expensive card, but like that one's excellent. I'll personally throw out the Deadly Tempest as one of mine, because I've used that one to win games multiple times. It's 6 mana, but everyone loses life for each creature that I destroyed from them, and I usually end up sacrificing all of my creatures to some sacrifice outlet before I have to do that. So I end up losing no life, and I possibly KO somebody. So like it does feel like a lot of these, like valuing just the efficiency, I get where that comes from, but there are a lot of other flexible options out there that are really, really valuable to look into.
Well, and as I noted too, like if you are newer to Magic, I don't think you probably realized 7 years ago when Damnation had only been printed in Time Spiral Block, how in demand that card was because it was this thing that like we didn't really have access to.
It was like $70. Yeah.
Yeah. So it had built up this legend kind of around it that also, I think for me especially, but for a lot of people that were playing back then too, it was this thing that you wanted for your deck that you couldn't have.
Right. Right.
And once you had access to it, then that's all you thought about. Well, now I have it and can put it in my deck, and you didn't think about whether you actually wanted it or not.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of, yeah, like you said, Dana, 60 card formats put a lot of prestige around it. There was cards that, again, like Brainstorm, like Dark Confidant. I remember when somebody finally, they saved up enough store credit at our game shop to get a Dark Confidant. They put it in, it was some commander deck, and they flipped over, I don't remember what card it was, but it was some like 7-mana creature that they flipped over, and they're like, this sucks. I don't like this anymore. And they immediately took it out. And so like, it's always funny that those cards like Damnation that just, they don't translate as far as like why people are playing them in other formats. And then does that carry over to commander?
Can I share another one here? And this one might be controversial for some folks out there. I hope not. But like this again comes down to, Dana, as you were hinting at earlier, about a personal way that we play these cards. And so I want this to reflect upon me, not upon other players. I want to state that up front. I think I was overplaying the card Counterspell for a really long time. Just 2-blue counter target spell, lovely instant, shows up in, here's a number, 43% of decks that are eligible to play it. That is wild. 780,000 decks are playing Counterspell. Huge, very, super, ridiculously popular card. What I noticed, though, is that in the times that I was using a Counterspell, I was never countering creatures. I was only ever using it like a negate, or the way that I would use a Stubborn Denial to protect my own stuff from non-creature spells. And so it took me a while to realize, oh wait, if I just played Stubborn Denial here, I would get basically, I would save a mana. So Counterspell was a big one for me that I was like, well, it's Counterspell. I've got to play it just because it has that fame associated with it. But I think that like once I moved away to some of those slightly more efficient ones that I knew I was always using this card defensively, I didn't miss the flexibility, and I still don't miss that flexibility, and I still prefer a lot of those other ones that do save me a mana, and it comes in handy several times.
Yeah, it's not to say that Counterspell doesn't have value, but I do think that if all you're using is for one purpose, then yeah, absolutely reevaluate that, and could Swan Song or an Offer You Can't Refuse, those still do the same thing. Maybe there's a little bit of a trade-off there for the mana efficiency, but a lot of times you're playing in a way, at least I know for you, Joey, that doesn't really matter. Protecting your own thing and being able to spend the most mana on your own turn, that's the important part.
So not only do I agree with all the things Joey said and think they apply to me, but on top of that, I found that the double blue mana requirement for Counterspell didn't really mesh with my own personal playstyle either. I think it's different, again, if you're talking about like non-commander formats, where you're oftentimes seeing that show up in like a draw go style deck.
Right.
So you're, for the most part, not doing anything until someone else's turn. You have all the mana available. You have your options to use 2-blue pips for Counterspell and then maybe do something else at instant speed or whatever it is you're doing. Like, you are playing control. That's way more difficult in Commander. And for me and my personal playstyle, again, I'm using it defensively too. So I don't want to have to worry about leaving up 2-blue mana. I don't always have something else to use it on necessarily, because that's not the style deck I'm playing. I'm using it as an oh crap button to hit if something goes wrong. And I don't want to have to leave 2-blue mana up, nor is it like very efficient to have to do that in the way I'm playing. So yes, I agree with you. And it also doesn't fit my playstyle, because that's just not the kind of game I'm playing where I'm easily able to leave double blue mana up. I would much rather occasionally have to give someone some cards from an Arcane Denial and not have to be cautious about what I do in my main phase to be able to leave 2-blue mana up. I want to be able to like leave 1-blue and something else up and be able to solve the problem if it comes up, and if it doesn't, have it not feel like it impacted my turn.
And I remember you also felt similarly about the card Disallow. When that one came out, like years and years ago, I remember you talking about Disallow, because that's the one, it's 3-mana, counter target spell activated ability or triggered ability. And that's a really cool card. It's very, very flexible. But you noticed in your own play patterns that you were not actually using its flexibility.
Right.
It was like, 1% of times that those other modes would ever come up, and you were basically only ever using it in a way that it mimicked a cancel. It's so like you were only ever countering target spell, in which case you were overpaying for that effect. And so I think that's possibly another one that I don't know how long you were playing it, but like maybe it was one of those cards that's just like, oh, maybe I didn't need to have this in my deck as long as I did.
Yeah, and I think playing Disallow and realizing how it didn't really work for me was one of the things that made me realize I was not using counterspell correctly, or at least not using it to the most efficient way that I could use a counterspell in my particular deck and with my playstyle.
Yeah, really interesting examples. And you know what? We got plenty more too. I'm really loving this conversation, you guys, but we are going to put a quick pin in it because, I mean, there's a whole bunch of extra data on EDH Rec 2 that we kind of want to challenge. There's a lot of data out there that we don't always agree with, so we'd love to challenge the stats real quick, and we'll be back at our main topic after we get to some of those numbers that we disagree with.
So I'll get us started.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day? The answer is take a nap, right? Because I would take a nap. I'd take a nap in the sun like a giant lazy cat. But regardless of what you do, we all wish we had a little more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it, even if that thing is napping. For me personally, it's been helpful to learn positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It also empowers you to be the best version of yourself. And it's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's for those who just want to improve their life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/EDH today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/EDH.
Start it off real quick, and I'm going to start us off with a listener-submitted challenge, which you can do. Just send us an email, edhrecast@gmail.com. And this week, a listener, Etienne Malenfant, sent us an email and had a really good point about an interaction that doesn't really work the way that I think a lot of players are anticipating it working. So they said, I wanted to talk about Lost in the Maze from Murders at Karlov Manor in Hanada decks, the Dawn Crowned. So Hanada is one in Jeskai colors. It's a white, a red, and a blue. For a 4-4 Kirin Spirit with Flying and Trample, it says spells you cast cost one less to cast for each target, and then spells your opponents cast cost one more for each target. So Etienne goes on to say that 25% of the deck seems, or 25% of the players seem to be playing the card, and it doesn't actually work with a cost reduction on Hanada since targeting happens on Lost in the Maze on ETB and not when it's cast. So Lost in the Maze is X blue-blue for an enchantment with flash that says, when Lost in the Maze enters the battlefield, you tap X target creatures, then put a stun counter on each of those creatures you don't control, and then tapped creatures you control have hexproof. This is absolutely true. So when Lost in the Maze enters the battlefield, that's when you're doing the tapping. So you have to pay X up front because you're not casting it targeting those creatures. This is a really specific timing interaction where Hanada would be reducing the cost of the spell, but it actually doesn't work the same way as something like Curse of the Swine does, where it's a sorcerer that you're targeting when you're casting those things. So the fact that 25% of the players, like Etienne points out, it's huge for a card that doesn't really synergize with the commander at all. I think this is a great catch. These are the types of challenges we really like seeing because, yeah, players are starting to latch onto a synergy, what actually isn't a synergy that doesn't work the way that players are hoping it does. So this is a really good catch, Etienne, and thank you for the email as well.
Etienne, that is so clever. Really, really good catch. I love that challenge.
My challenge this week is for the card Public Enemy. Particularly in Hilda of the Icy Crown decks. Public Enemy, 2 and a blue for an aura enchant creature. All creatures attack enchanted creature's controller each combat if able, and when enchanted creature dies, draw a card. Now, I think Public Enemy probably in general is a little bit underplayed. I think it's a really good card that just kind of got missed in the swarm of releases that happen bi-weekly the last several years. But what makes it especially good in a Hilda of the Icy Crown deck is you can put it on a creature you've tapped, and then you can kind of keep that creature tapped down because Hilda decks are oftentimes built around keeping things tapped. And what's especially useful about keeping the enchanted creature tapped is they can't use it for a blocker and have it die then. So as long as you keep that creature tapped, until somebody physically destroys it, that means all attacking creatures just have to keep attacking that player, and they can't use it as a blocker to make that go away. It's just an excellent card, but in a deck like that where you can just force someone else to remove it or and then draw you a card, or all attacks have to keep going that way until that player is removed from the game, is a fantastic bit of synergy. And it's right now only in 17 of 5,500 Hilda decks, and it should definitely be in more.
I gotta say, I'm so proud of you, Dana, for talking about a card that is effectively goading people when I know that you don't like your stuff being
right,
goaded.
Yes. Yeah.
So, like, I'm proud of you, buddy. I think you're
thanks, man.
It's character development. But yeah, Public Enemy, that's a gnarly card. All right, for my challenge, I want to talk about some very, very famous cards in the format. And this kind of goes back to the momentum discussion that we were having earlier. Evolving Wilds and Terramorphic Expanse are bonkers popular. Evolving Wilds is showing up in 805,000 decks, 22% of decks that are eligible to play it, which is all decks. Terramorphic is showing up in 16%. It's showing up in nearly 600,000 decks. Like, these are hugely popular cards because they've been printed over and over again. They show up in precons all the time. But there's a new version of them, a very, very new version of them from Karlov Manor called Escape Tunnel, a land that also lets you sacrifice it to find a tapped basic land. But it, in addition to that, has this other ability, in case you need it, tap, sacrifice, Escape Tunnel, target creature with power 2 or less can't be blocked this turn. This card isn't, like, amazingly stellar or anything, but I just want to shout it out as a card that is very much going to be completely trampled by the relentless pace of set releases. Like, those other two titans of, like, budget fetch lands, Terramorphic and Evolving Wilds, they're so popular that they will stay popular. Whereas Escape Tunnel, people are probably going to forget this one's here. But if you are looking for a, like, if you need in your landfall deck, or your budget landfall deck, another option of something to get you some extra landfall triggers, this is a great option. And sometimes that extra, you know, two power unblockable thing, it could come in handy. Maybe not all that often, but certainly in some cases. Like, I could see a Yuriko deck maybe occasionally making use of this, or like an Arcades deck maybe making use of this. But this card is not showing up in a whole lot of decks at all. It's showing up in 6,000 decks-ish right now. And it's really only showing up in the decks of Karlov Manor commanders, since those are the closest commanders to them. So it just tends to be people build what is closest at hand, which totally makes sense. But I just don't want this card to get left in the dust. It doesn't deserve that when those other cards are clearly, you know, people are playing a whole bunch of them. So especially if you like budget landfall, don't forget about this particular option. Make a swap out if you want to. And actually, I'm going to use Terramorphic and Evolving Wilds as a way back into the main topic, because Dana, you actually had some amazing advice a couple of years ago that made me realize, wait, I've been playing Evolving Wilds and Terramorphic Expanse for too long, specifically in the context of non-landfall two-color decks. At the end of the day, I was getting a tapped land that gives me one color, and you were like, well, you could just play, like, even a Guildgate would get you a tapped land that gives you either of your colors. And my mind was blown in that moment. So thank you is, I guess, what sure. what I wanted to say is that, like, yeah, if I don't have landfall synergies in this deck, if I don't need the shuffle ability, which I rarely do, why am I playing these in a two-color deck? Oh, it's just because I default assumed that they're the cards that you play. So yeah, I wanted to nominate those as other cards that I'm like, oh, I should have been thinking more critically about these, actually.
Well, in Once Upon a Time, you know, back when those cards were first released and back when we all started playing Commander, there were way less budget dual land options. Mm-hmm. I was going to point out at the end here, but I'll kind of mention it right now because it just makes sense. When you've been playing this game for a long time, it's pretty easy to, like, forget the assumptions that were once true are no longer necessarily true. And Once Upon a Time, that did make sense to run those because there just weren't a ton of maybe dual lands that you could run instead. So, like, they kind of function like an MDFC. I could go get whatever particular land I needed more than the rest and still also be running 20 basics because there were so few options for you to run for, like, good, you know, budget dual lands. That's not the case anymore. Like, there's just so many things that you can do that you can put the guild gates or lands that gain you one life or the artifact lands or whatever. Like, there's just a ton of options that exist out there now that are better, but it's easy to forget that because you had that, like, truism in your mind that was once accurate and you haven't reinterrogated that over the course of, you know, how many years. And that's an easy thing to get into.
Well, and Dan, if we want to just be boomers for a second, too, and just talk about cards, you know, back in our day when we started playing the game, one that I absolutely, I still latched onto, and I've very recently kind of deconditioned myself to playing this game, or at least reaching for it, is Duplicant. And that's a card that I feel like back when we were playing in 2015 and before, this card was great. It did so many different things. So it's 6 mana for an artifact creature shapeshifter. That's a 2/4 that says, when it enters the battlefield, you may exile target non-token creature. And as long as a card exiled with Duplicant is a creature card, Duplicant has the power, toughness, and creature type of the creature card that is exiled with Duplicant, and it's still a shapeshifter. So this is fine. This was a good way to just kind of get rid of everything. Exile is a creature. It's colorless, so you could put it in any pretty much any deck. But what I really found myself shifting away from is I don't care about how big the creature is. I want the abilities from the creature. And paying 6 mana for that, you don't get to copy any of the abilities from these creatures. That sometimes they're smaller creatures, but they just need to get that impactful thing off the battlefield. So 6 mana, A, that's a lot of mana to be playing for this type of effect. But also, there are just other better ways to do it half the time, too, whether it's bouncing it, finding ways to steal it, sometimes permanently.
Right.
And so Duplicant really just wasn't doing what I wanted it to be doing. And because, A, the creatures have just gotten so much better. They're not bigger, but they're just better.
Yeah. Oh, Matt, this is such a good pick, because I totally agree with you. Like, you do have to actively be abusing this Enter the Battlefield ability for it to really be the card that you want it to be. And there are so many other cards that do similar effects like these that it is much tougher competition. And yeah, I totally agree with you. I feel like, oh, I can't possibly, like, I don't want to talk bad about Duplicant. I love that thing. It helped me learn to be the player that I am, is like the way I feel about it, which is true. But like, it having helped us on to like begin the journey doesn't mean that it needs to be there by the end of the journey when in our decks these days, is the unfortunate reality.
Yeah, and if it came out today, it would probably get +1 counters equal to that creature's power and toughness, which is a level of synergy that would maybe interface with whatever deck you're running. Like if you're running a +1 counters deck, you're like, oh, okay, I hit this creature that will come into play. I can remove a thing. I can come into play with a bunch of counters on it that I can then like double or move around or you know, do whatever things you're doing in a +1 counters deck. But it's not that. It's a static power and toughness. And there's a reason no one plays Tarmogoyf in Commander. Because like just having a you know decent sized body is that with no way to punch that damage through just isn't enough in this format these days.
Well, and there's so many different ways too. Like I said, every color has ways that are gonna do this type of effect that don't require you to abuse it, like Joey said. And also like flickering something infinitely and kind of wiping the board and keeping it. That's just not the style of play I like. But even if you're like, you're in green, you can't exile creature. Like, you just play a Cogla for the same amount of mana and you can still get rid of a creature and leave a body behind. There's all sorts of different ways that you can get this effect. But like blue has a million clone effects. And so it's just what it was doing back when we were first playing, it just hasn't kept up with anymore. Because you're not copying Myrim because you want a 6/6 body. You're copying Myrim because you want to make all your dragons go brr.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think the unfortunate reality for Duplicant is that stuff like Meteor Golem and like the new Cityscape leveler. Which like the different levels of abusability, some of them are like cast and attack triggers instead of just enters. But like it got much stiffer competition as the years went on. So I agree.
Yep.
I kind of want to ask, did y'all try out Smuggler's Share? A lot. Like, I remember being pretty hype about that card. And are you currently playing Smuggler's Share? It's just a thing I want to ask the group that is assembled here.
So I when I saw it, I remember thinking, oh, I think this is probably a better version of Monologue Tax to a Cree. Like in terms of the value it's going to generate you. Because I didn't love Monologue Tax when it was first released, and it's never really worked for Matt.
You obviously had to say that card, didn't you? You had to say that one.
But I felt like Smuggler's Share was going to be the version of that effect that worked.
Filling up my bingo sheet again, Matt complains about Monologue Tax.
Yeah.
So I absolutely tried it, because like, I thought this was going to be the card that we all had hoped Monologue Tax was. And it also wasn't the card that we thought Monologue Tax was.
I know. I'm looking at a price chart for it right now. And like a year ago, it was like $12 and now it's $3. And I think that just does kind of reflect like my own personal journey with this card as well. Smuggler's Share is the 3-mana enchantment. At the beginning of each end step, you draw a card for each opponent who drew 2 or more cards this turn. Then you create a treasure for each opponent who had 2 or more lands enter the battlefield under their control this turn. And I still do, I like this card. I still do appreciate it.
Yeah.
But what is that new white enchantment? The Pairs card, Trouble in Pairs, I think is the name, is clearly outpacing this one.
Trouble in Pairs is clearly a troublesome card. It does so many things. That card is, I think the youths still say cracked is what I would say.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. But I just, Smuggler's Share, I was hype on this for a really long time, and I just don't think it ever delivered. And like, it took me, I think I got my blinders up when I had this. Like, I would play it in a game and like nothing would happen for a round off of it. And it's like, no, it's okay. I'll still, you know, and then like stuff would die and it would go and it'd be like, well, I'm sure next time. Like, I would keep on giving it chances. And like, I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily to continue giving chances, but I gave this one a lot of chances and it didn't do what I had built it up in my mind to do. And it took a while to like actually for me to admit that to myself. And so this is another one I thought could probably fit this category that we're talking about here, which is a shame.
Well, and I see what Smuggler's Share at least is trying to do, because one of my favorite decks lately has been the Council of Four, which is all about my opponents doing other things. And the more they do, the more I get in return. Mm-hmm. Smuggler's Share is trying to give that in, put that in the 99. So I understand where they're coming from with it. But unless you're supporting it with other cards, like you're forcing players to draw extra cards, that's when sometimes I think it can fall short. And I'm sure Smuggler's Share still is in the higher powered pods, where I think maybe a little bit above where the three of us play. Maybe Smuggler's Share still absolutely is great, and maybe it's just a little slow for the value too. So it's not really, it's not excelling in a certain way that any given playgroup might need it to be.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of card that also you need to see it not work in a deck before you realize why it doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work, or at least works less well than you would have hoped, is because it's much easier to play around the effects than you realize reading it. Like, sure. Okay, well, yeah, I'm going to be playing against a landfall deck and they're going to play multiple lands per turn. And yeah, they're going to maybe play a Rampant Growth now and then. But plenty often they can play it, you know, their fetch land and not crack it until the next turn when it's not going to give you that trigger. Or like,
exactly.
People that are drawing cards are going to like be able to work around it to a degree that's much more difficult to do with a Rhystic Study or a Smothering Tithe.
Yeah, precise. Honestly, what it kind of reminds me of also is like what I had to admit to myself with like Treasure Napper when that one came out, the Red Goblin that takes your opponent's mana rocks if they tap them for mana. I thought this was going to be huge. I was so hype on this one. And the actual reality is just that, like, it kind of caused my opponents to be a little bit more careful about their mana. Like, sometimes I'd get a something, but not, like, reliably. And so it wasn't the boost that I thought. It was just a little bit of a nuisance for my opponents. And then it was a creature that tended to, like, die pretty quickly. And I was like, no, it's supposed to be good. Like, so that was another one that I was just like, no, I was not willing to admit it quite as fast as I probably should have.
But it takes a while to realize that, I think. Like, you have to have it in play for a while to be like, this just isn't happening. And it would also, it's also one of those cards that on occasion would do just enough that you're like, oh, see, it worked that game, so I'm going to keep it in. Like,
exactly.
It does that thing too, which is super frustrating.
And you convince yourself that, oh, well, I'm stopping them from doing something bigger. And not always is that actually the case. So, like, you kind of trick yourself with it. Yeah, exactly. So, like, both of them. I'm just like, no.
Yeah, well, and if we want to talk about cards that we kind of just weren't playing right because of our certain play styles too, Simic Ascendancy for me is a card that I want to do things in a fair way. I want to get value out of everything. But sometimes cards just get too much attention. I know, Dana, you don't like playing cards that draw a bunch of attention onto you. And Simic Ascendancy, if a card says you win the game on it, people are going to look at it. People are going to try to make sure you don't get to use it. So for a green and a blue, it's an enchantment that says you can pay one, a green and a blue, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control, and whatever one or more counters are put on a creature you control, you put that many growth counters on Simic Ascendancy, and then at your upkeep, if you have 20 or more, you get to win the game. And I just wanted it as an engine. I just wanted a way to crank out a bunch of +1/+1 counters onto my creatures. And it turns out people don't want you to win the game. So it always had a massive target on its back.
It turns out people don't want you to win the game.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's just the... That really got me mad.
I'm glad I can oops into a chuckle out of young Joseph Schultz.
Yeah, it's the kind of card that, like, the way it's worded, and because it only costs 2 mana, there's a temptation to want to play it and then, like, hope it gets you to that win condition over the course of multiple turns. But all that does is make people like want to make sure you never get to that position and just draws a ton of heat. Now, there are some decks I do run it in a single deck, but it's a deck where I can oftentimes drop it and then know I can get enough counters on it with one spin around the board to win during my upkeep. But that's not, I think the amount of decks that can do it that way is way smaller than most people realize. So it just winds up painting a bullseye on them. But again, it's one of those things like, because you're putting counters on it, there's a little bit like it creates that, I almost got there. I got 12 on it that time. Maybe next time I'll do it. It'll work next time.
Matt, it kind of sounds like you're saying this card has sort of like the Blood Chief Ascension problem of like how much attention it draws to you immediately when it lands.
Yes.
And yeah, I do feel that. I mean, I adore both of those cards, but I am reticent to play them unless I know I can take the heat. And you were saying like personal playstyle is just like, I was not expecting as much heat as these things drew. And so like, maybe I shouldn't have painted quite the bullseye directly upon my forehead as these cards were drawing.
Yeah. And for me, at least, it should have just, let's just find a different card that does the same thing, but just doesn't say you win the game. Because I'm never going to try to win that way. And if I do it, it's usually by accident. Mm. Whereas I could play something that's going to draw me a little less attention, but it's going to still get me that effect that I'm really needing. And again, something more that kind of what Dana does in his decks.
The next ones I have here are, again, kind of a bit of a boomer conventional wisdom kind of thing. That's Eternal Witness / Regrowth in green in particular. And again, those are excellent cards. Eternal Witness is in a gazillion decks, and it's a very good card, but it's a good enough for your deck, and is the things it's doing is necessary today as they once were. I understand the conventional wisdom in 2014 when the way Commander looked, there were a lot less cards that kind of won you the game. So if you're playing a mono green elf deck and your win conditions are Crater Hoof and, you know, Overrun, and that's it, because that was really what the available options were, then having an Eternal Witness or a Regrowth or some kind of fuck like that in that deck to bring those back if they get milled or if it gets counterspelled and to use it again next turn was a relatively valuable thing. And those are both also just generally very efficient cards. Even if you're not bringing back your win condition, if you're bringing back your Explosive Vegetation, Matt, or whatever card you're bringing back, like that's a pretty good piece of value too. You're spending 2 or 3 mana to bring a thing back, and in the case of EWIT, you can maybe blink it or have it for a blocker.
Right.
But the face of the game has changed to the point where there's a lot more ways to win games, and there's a lot more cards that you maybe want to run in your deck that push your win condition forward or interact with the things you're doing. And it's been my experience that like just running a card that's a generic, this is a pretty good piece of value, isn't really something I want to be doing. But it took me longer than I think I needed to realize that just running a card because it's viewed as conventionally good, even if it is conventionally good, is no longer something I maybe wanted to keep doing.
I think Balaged Recovery has a lot to do with opening a door into this conversation in terms of like, there are other options that we can explore for this effect, and we don't always have to go with the go-to, the classic example. I do still love me some EWIT. I adore EWIT, but I'm also the guy who's constantly bringing it out of the graveyard. And you know, if that's not the style of play that you're doing, there are potentially other things that you could have versatility from. And so stuff like Balaged Recovery kind of helps us be reminded of that to question some of the things that we just always assumed.
Yeah, having Balaged Recovery in my decks and then realizing how often I just didn't necessarily want to be using it. So I just played it as a land and like kept moving forward with my plan versus trying to like cast it to gain a little bit of value back. Made me realize I probably just didn't want that kind of a card taking up a slot in my deck. Now, when it's not taking up a slot, kind of like in terms of Balaged Recovery, that's a whole different deal.
Right.
But I didn't want to be using that in my 99 anymore. I would much rather have cards in the actual like non-land slots that were advancing my game plan consistently versus maybe helping me recover something.
Right, yeah. I think you're going to get a lot of people who are just like, Dana hates Eternal Witness. Like, that's not the case, but just like, there are things to investigate about, like, are you using this because it's like classically good, or are you using it because your deck makes it especially good? And that's the question worth asking to make sure that like you're getting every inch of value out of these things, that you are blinking it, that you are clamping it to draw extra cards and stuff like that. So like those are good questions to ask.
Well, and a question that I would add on to that too, Joey, because you had really two good points on there. One is, am I trying to use the card in a way it wasn't intended to? And that was a reason that I think Grizzly's Salvage is a card that always seemed to fall short for me because, again, Dana doesn't like Eternal Witness. Joey, you're looping Eternal Witness. I would cast Grizzly's Salvage as a way to instant speed, try to find a creature or a land card, and then the rest kind of be damned. Whereas Joey, you love filling up your graveyard, whereas that's something that just, especially back then when I was casting Grizzly's Salvage, I didn't really care about a full graveyard. I wasn't playing graveyard decks back then. I was just trying to use it as an instant speed, kind of draw one effectively. And that's just not the right way that you want to be using cards. It was me trying to force my mindset onto a card that was intended for a completely different way that you want to be playing any given game or deck.
Oh man, Grizzly Salvage is so good. That's a 2-mana Golgari instant that lets you look at the top 5, you pick a creature or a land, the rest go to your graveyard. And Matt, you're absolutely right. I love filling up a graveyard with cards like these. But if you were actually using it for specifically the cantrip ability,
yeah,
I can see why it's just like, oh, this isn't doing exactly what I want. Like, the appeal of this card is definitely like...
The appeal definitely goes down, yeah.
Yeah, I'm using this for the graveyardiness. But, oh man, it's... I do adore it. But you're right, like, there are going to be some differences in playstyle that will emerge here. I think over time it's become a lot more apparent, though, like how important having stuff in your graveyard can be. Like, a card that I was actually quick to remove from my decks was, like, I think it's called Life's Finale, which was the black destroy all creatures, and then you can find 3 creatures from someone's decks and toss them into the graveyard. And initially I was just like, oh, this is great. This sounds awesome. And I think a lot of people are annoyed that, like, you're taking my best creatures or whatever. And I was like, oh, I'll be able to reanimate. I'll be able to steal their creatures. And that was my plan. Except these days people are savvy and they reanimate them before I do. I learned that one pretty quick when someone else did it to me. I was like, oh, shoot. All right. Maybe I'll find other rats instead of these. But yeah, filling up a graveyard, turns out it's pretty important, Matt.
Well, and just it's important for some people. It's not important for me, which is why I had to take the deck out, or I take the card out of my decks, because it just, it didn't matter to me. And you need that, like, those little things to matter if you're playing something like Grizzly Salvage.
Sure. And the last example here that I wanted to put forward is a card that, like, I think I should have taken these out of my deck sooner than I did, not because they weren't good for my deck, but because of the social experience that they created. I think that's one last note that I wanted to touch on here. And Matt, it actually is something I've heard plenty of your opinions about over time, which is Dictate of Erebos and Grave Pact.
Yeah.
Which are, of course, whenever a creature of yours dies, each opponent also has to sacrifice a creature. These cards are amazing, and I had them in my Marin deck for so long because they were so good at controlling the board, because I would just sacrifice stuff all the time and my opponents wouldn't have stuff and I'd be able to take over a game. And they were the type of cards that encouraged a very certain type of myopia, where I did not realize my opponents are not having the fun time that I am, and I actually in my commander games do want to be more attentive to what they're doing. And the wild thing about these is that I think in that deck I kind of justified it to myself, because I was like, well, I'm not doing Mind Slicer stuff, I'm not doing the most egregious thing with Marin, but even something that's slightly less egregious is still kind of egregious. So these are some cards where I was just like, I'm glad I'm not playing these anymore, just because I get to see my opponent smile more often, and that's actually what I'm here for.
Well, so yeah, and there's another way to look at this too. Like, number one, yes, I absolutely don't want to be doing that, particularly when you're playing with people you don't know. I don't want to be locking them out of the game. That doesn't feel good for me. It's not what I'm there for. And then you come back to, like, well, what if I'm playing with friends, though, where, like, everyone's on the same page and no one necessarily minds that I'm, you know, locking them out because I understand. Well, that creates an additional problem, because then you're making them want to alter their decks to deal with you. Which also doesn't feel great, but then you create an arms race, and then maybe you're finding yourself in a position where your friends are all running a bunch of cards that are preventing you from doing things because they know what you're going to do to them. Like, I would much rather play cards that, like, people that are effective without making anyone have to focus on me. And I think Grave Pact, even in, I've used micro and macro a few times, but, like, in a macro sense, if you're running that in a small environment and you're locking people out constantly, they are probably going to respond to that at some point, and the response they're going to do is going to be detrimental to your attempting to win a game.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes back to an adage that Matt coined a while ago that I truly love and I really take it to heart, of just, like, building decks that even you would enjoy losing to. And these were not cards that created that experience necessarily. I kind of realized, like, oh, you know what? across the table, I would not have as much fun. And it's nice to like to find that and echo that sentiment. And I just thought that would be a nice final touch, maybe to kind of include here, is just like, these cards are amazing. That was kind of the problem of them, though. And like, it was a moment of having availability for self-reflection was something that I wanted to bring these up for. So thank you, Matt, for that great adage, because I really do take it to heart constantly in deck building nowadays.
Well, thanks, Joe. I'm glad I could have a profound effect on your deck building strategy. And Dana actually, too, not like to toot my own horn, but like Dana actually narrated that really well, where he had an Athreos deck. It was the second Athreos, the coin version from Theros Beyond Death, where it was a Pestilence deck. And Pestilence decks are really good at not letting people have things on the battlefield, especially when you're giving them death touch and all sorts of other abilities.
Right.
And so, Danny, I think you and I played against that deck maybe once, and afterwards you're like, that wasn't even fun to play for me. And so watching just like everybody else is like the life just glass over our eyes the way I'm sure it did. I know you don't have that deck anymore, but I'm sure like on some level you wanted it to work out, but just it was very good to a point where it was detrimental to other people's experiences.
I do actually have it together. I just very rarely, I actually, weirdly enough, played it last week. And realized that was the first time I'd played it in probably 2 years.
Fair.
And I played it with friends, and we knew it was coming. We were ready for it. And I'm not going to play it again for 2 more years, probably. for all the reasons you just said.
Oh, man.
Same reason my AC Tyrant of Gyre Straits, like, it does big explosive things, but just, even when you're trying to focus it on sea creatures and just like having some sort of a shtick that isn't obnoxious, the commander is too obnoxious to really dial it back.
Right, truly. Like those are some of the types of commander decks that are like really fun to like goldfish with, or like we've got our decks on Archidect, and Archidect has this amazing playtester feature, and like I have so much fun doing the playtester feature with decks like these, because like, ooh, look at the synergies that I can do. But then when I actually put them in front of other human people, I'm just like like it kind of creates a little bit of an uh-oh. But they are really fun to like explore with in the brewing stage, and they're very clever. But like, you know, making sure that you're not just looking at your own board, but you're looking up at the other people is like a note that is nice to end on here with some of those, I think. And I guess also one final reminder is that, like, you know, we've talked a little bit of shade about some of the cards that we've discussed here. It's just like, oh, I'm glad I'm not playing these anymore. But also, like, I am glad for the experiences that they gave us so that we could actually finally learn these lessons. Like, overall, it is actually good that these were part of our commander histories, I guess, because they did teach us lessons that are valuable to how we build decks nowadays. So overall, I'm not mad about any of these cards. It's good that we had the experiences with them that we did. But there are some that I'm just like, I played this for maybe longer than I should have, though. So
yeah, just getting in the mindset that like you should just, you know, if you are really looking to tweak your decks, just reevaluate, why am I running this versus just the default, oh, because it's good or because it's a conventional wisdom, because it was once a really powerful card. Might not be any of those things anymore, but it's easy to default to that. And yeah, a lot of these cards have made me do that reevaluation process.
Yeah, Commander metagame is changing a whole lot these days. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So with that, though, I think that wraps us up, and that means we're going to call this episode to a close, but we do definitely have to ask our listeners, which cards did they wish that they had taken out of their deck sooner? We would love to hear from you all, and if our listeners want to get in touch with us to tell us all about those cards, guys, where can they find you online? Let's start with you, Matt.
So you can find me on pretty much any social media platform at Mathimus55. That's MathimuS55. And don't forget, we are proud members of Team Ultimate Guard. So if you need just some of the best magic accessories out there on the market, Ultimate Guard is just the one-stop shop for everything you need.
And Dana, how about you?
You can find me online at Dana Roach. I'm writing articles for EDHREC and Commander's Herald. And you can find all of us together at patreon.com/EDHRECcast.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz online. I enjoy being on Instagram. It's more fun over there, so that's probably where you'll find me. You can also find the cast at EDHRECcast everywhere online. Plus, if you have a question for us, you can contact us at EDHRECcast@gmail.com. Our thanks go out once again to Chase for their fantastic work in the post-production of the show. You can find them online at Mana Curves. Listeners, will be back at you next week with more data and insights, but until then, remember, EDH wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.